Doom do 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 doom do do. Doom do 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 doom do do.
Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 46 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Hi, plant friends. I hope you all have had wonderfully planty weeks. I had the craziest planty week that I want to tell you about before we dive into today's episode. Two new plants came into my household, and I know that I am pretty openly on a plant pause, but like I've said before, there are a couple of plants that have been on my wish list for a while that I knew would kind of flow into my life at the right time, and in a kind of crazy way, they both flowed into my life this week at the same time. So first off, Billy was gone for 5 days, and when he came back, he told me he had a surprise, but since he's the one who instilled the plant pause, I really didn't think that he would be bringing home a plant. And when he got home, there was a little miniature fiddly fig waiting for me. So he was out in Boston at the shop and found a ceramicist that was also selling plants and got an insane deal on a very small cutting of a fiddly fig. It's less than like a foot tall. I would actually say it's more like 6 inches tall. So I'm so excited. I feel like I've had this whole episode on fiddly figs. People text me about questions and care questions for them, and I do my best to answer from the episode and what I've learned from you guys, but I've never had one of my own. So I put it in my bookshelf that I have the Modern Sprout Grow Bar installed in, and it's adjusting very well. Still deciding what I'm going to call it. So you can message me on Instagram if you have any fun fiddly fig name ideas for me. And then second off, I just wanted to give a shout out. So I wanted to give my sister a Monstera for Christmas. It's kind of an inside joke that we have going on, and I wanted it to be big and amazing, and I needed to order it online. And so I ended up Amazon Priming a Monstera, which I was pretty nervous about, but it was the best deal I could find. It was also kind of the only Monstera I could find ordering online. And it was from this company, JM Bamboo. And I have to say, I was a little skeptical about Amazon priming a plant, but I had the most amazing experience with this company, JM Bamboo. So the first Monstera shipped and got lost in the mail. And I obviously have been so excited to see this plant. So I had been tracking the plant on, you know, USPS every day. And the minute that I saw that the plant didn't arrive the day it was supposed to, I looked at the tracking number and I wrote the company on Amazon and I said, hey, this plant's lost in the mail. It's now going to be in transit for more than a week. I'm nervous about this. And they immediately sent me a replacement plant overnight. I didn't even ask them to. That was just like their immediate customer service impulse, which I was so impressed by. That plant arrived in incredible condition. And then the next day, the other plant arrived. So I now have two Monstera. And they're huge. They're like 8-inch, 10-inch pot Monsteras. They have gorgeous leaves. They both have fenestrations. So my sister's going to get one, and me and Billy are going to get one. I'm so excited. I actually had to order another Soltech Solution Light just so I have a nice place for this nice juicy Monstera to live. But that was the responsibility. If I'm going to grow the collection, I need to do it right. And so that meant ordering another grow light, but I'm totally on board about it. Anyway, speaking of light and understanding our natural light and whether or not we need artificial lights, I'm so excited about another two-part series. Guys, sorry, I have two-part series back-to-back. Let me know if you're enjoying this format or not. This will be the last two-part series, I think, for a while, but I'm experimenting with it. So if you like the smaller episodes that kind of just have a to-be-continued feel, let me know. And if you don't like it, also let me know. I'm here to serve you. So this two-part episode is on a topic that has plagued me in the first year of my plant parenthood big time, and that's understanding natural light and what the heck bright indirect light actually means. Medium light, bright indirect light, what's going on there? So when figuring out how to do this episode, I knew I needed a lighting expert, a plant expert, someone with a science background, someone who's kind of a nerd who can walk me through this topic in which I get really confused about and really don't know that much. And thus enters Leslie Halleck. So Leslie is a horticulturalist by... Did I say that right? Horticulturalist by education and profession. She's got a passion for plants and gardening, as you are going to find out in our amazing conversations that we have. And she has worked in almost all of the sectors of the gardening industry. So she started off in nurseries. She became the director of horticultural research at the Dallas Arboretum and Botanical Gardens. So like, that's real fancy. And then she actually founded Halleck Horticultural, which is her personal consulting service for green industry businesses. So she gets it. Her book, Gardening Under Lights, The Complete Guide for Indoor Growers, is the ultimate guide to understanding artificial lighting for plant parents of any experience level. And I have learned so much from this book. I've had it for a while and I've referenced it a lot just with trying to figure out my artificial lighting setup. So Leslie joins me in this two-part journey to share her years of experience with houseplants and indoor gardening, but ironically, not to discuss artificial light, but to discuss natural light and the basics of measuring our natural light to actually better understand what our indoor environment is and maybe if we need to supplement with lights or not. So in this two-part episode, today's episode I've titled General Rules, and next week's episode is titled Measuring Tools. So today, General Rules is going to consist of a lengthy conversation with Leslie about lighting basics, how we can understand our indoor lighting environments without special or expensive meters. She also just imparts piece after piece of plant parenthood wisdom. It's kind of amazing. She teaches us a lot about understanding natural light, but also just a lot about being a plant parent. And you can kind of tell, like, throughout the episode, I just kind of start fangirling on her a little bit. She's awesome. And then next week, measuring tools, we're going to dive into this amazing homework assignment that Leslie gave me to do actually before our interview, which involved me using a light meter on my phone to measure my surroundings. And then we discuss the shocking aha moments I had with this homework assignment. Spoiler alert, I really didn't understand my indoor lighting, even though I thought I did. So it's a really interesting conversation next week, and we give you guys some actionable tools to go measure your own indoor spaces so you guys can be empowered by really knowing what your light setup is. So I hope this two-part series makes this tricky situation of bright indoor light a little bit less scary and helps empower you to continue blooming and growing. Leslie, thank you so much for coming on Bloom and Grow Radio.
I'm excited to be here.
It's a big moment. Big moment for Bloom and Grow to crack the code on what the hell bright indirect light actually is.
Yes, that is a conundrum. It is a conundrum.
So before I just start to like mine your brain for so many questions that I have about what the hell light is and how to actually measure it, I would love to just hear a little bit about your incredible journey to becoming the author of Gardening Under Lights and hear a little bit about all the amazing things you do.
Well, that is a long story. I've been in the horticulture industry for a good 25 years, so I'm going to try to keep this really short okay. as best that I can. I am what I like to call a multi-passioned entrepreneur and professional. So okay. I come from a background of gardeners and artists. I actually spent the first couple of years at university in art school.
Oh, cool.
And but also caught the plant bug. I had many gardening women in my life from childhood who obviously planted a seed in me that mm-hmm. that gave me the core interest in plants and gardening. And when I was 18, 19 in college, after a couple of years in art school, I felt like, hey, I've got this art thing down. I'm not sure I need a degree in it. I want to go get a degree in something else that really interests me that I could turn into a profession. I can always do my art. I want to, jump into. So of course I picked the lucrative path of botany, from art to botany. So I switched my major over to biology and botany and immediately went to the closest local garden center called the Green Fiddler and talked them into, literally talked them into giving me a job. So I started working in a garden center and worked through my plant science degree, my undergrad degree. So had about 4 years of garden center experience and some landscaping experience under my belt by the time I graduated. Spent another year after college doing my landscaping services, and then went back to grad school at Michigan State in the horticulture department there in floriculture. Okay, which is greenhouse production. Okay. So all of my master's degree research was on environmental controls, lighting, temperature, all of that for greenhouse growing of perennials and flowering perennials specifically. So my goal after that was to go work in public gardens research, which I did. I landed at the Dallas Arboretum after finishing up my master's degree. And since then, you know, have done my tour of duty in nonprofit and landscape companies and many years in garden center. And finally, about 6 years ago, I decided I needed to jump ship and be my own boss. That suits my personality much better. It's yes, better for everybody.
I can relate.
Yes. And so I've been running my own consultancy for the last 6 years. It's I do both horticultural consulting and business and marketing consulting specifically for the green industry. So, you know, there's a long sorted history of all of the things I've done in the industry, but it's run the gamut. In terms of writing Gardening Under Lights, I had actually made a promise to myself that I was not going to write gardening books.
Really?
Funny enough. Well, you know, let's just call it not so much a profitable activity necessarily.
Mm. Okay.
You don't necessarily make money, a lot of money off of writing books, right?
And you're not an Oprah's book club.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they're garden books, they're plant books, right? So we're not talking about, you know, big bucks here. And it's a lot of work. Writing books like this is a lot of work. And I stay really busy, mm-hmm. you know, with my business and consulting. So Timber Press, Tom Fisher over at Timber Press approached me and said, hey, do you know anybody that could write about indoor growing and grow lighting specifically, but that could gear it towards the home grower, home gardening, not an academic publication, but a home grower. And I said, oh, you know, I don't know. Let me think about it for a minute. I'll see if I can get you a name, because, you know, my thing was I was not going to write books.
Right. But you know everyone in the business, so you'd refer them to someone.
Right. Exactly. So no problem. And I thought about it. And I went, well, you know, I guess I actually have a master's degree in this, and I do this, and I write for, you know, the consumer for a living. So maybe I should do this. And so I said that to him, and he said, yeah, that's kind of where we were trying to get you to. So we had a laugh about that. And then here you go. Gardening Under Lights became a reality. Long story short.
Wow. And it is, I mean, to my knowledge, one of the only like current books that has like up to date information about like how to measure light and kind of the advancements that's happened, right?
Yes. And that was key. I didn't want to write on a topic that, you know, that was already kind of ubiquitous out there in terms of other publications that were mm-hmm. already available. You know, there's some books out there from the 80s. But nothing had been updated.
Right.
There really wasn't anything for the current market, which seemed kind of crazy, you know, given the increasing popularity of growing all sorts of things indoors and what I like to call the closet garden coming out of the closet, if
yeah,
you will.
Totally.
You know, and with so many advances in grow lamp technology over the last few years, I looked around and said, wow, there really kind of isn't anything up to date for the home grower that's not specifically a cannabis growing book.
Right.
Right?
Which you do cover in your book.
Sure. There's a little section. It's in the herb section with the other herbs, because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. No big deal.
No big deal.
But it's not a cannabis book. This book is for people who, you know, want to do things like grow seeds successfully.
Yep.
Up to, you know, growing fruiting crops like tomatoes and cucumbers and grow tents in their garage. You know, I run the gamut. I wanted to give people the opportunity to learn how to rebloom their orchids or keep succulents alive inside in their house, which so many people struggle with.
We can all relate to that struggle.
You know, so my goal was to get a little geeky. Mm-hmm. I dive into some of the science in terms of how plants use it and how to measure it. But it's optional. You can pick and choose what of that information you want to absorb, or you can come back to it later. And then I have all sorts of practical growing information in the book for, you know, crop by crop when you decide you want to focus on
strawberries versus
strawberries, cilantro, you know, orchids, succulents. So my goal was to really make this a mainstream reference guide for home gardeners and plant keepers of all levels of experience and plant interests.
And you have my friends from Soltech Solutions lights in the book with the photos.
Yeah, well,
I recognized so many of their lights.
Yeah, the interesting thing is that for me, substance and style have to meld. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm an artist and horticulturist, right? So that goes hand in hand. I love beautiful things and I like my house to look pretty and I collect things that I think are pretty and I don't want to hang a 250-watt CFL or CMH grow lamp in my living room.
Yeah.
They're not exactly attractive.
No.
Right? And so when I first started writing this book, which now is going to be like 2.5 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a 2-year process to get a book out for those that aren't familiar with that process with a publisher. When I first started writing the book, of course, the first thing I did was start digging around for every option that was available that was more aesthetically pleasing, which there are hardly any grow lights that are aesthetically pleasing. And the one light I found 2.5 years ago that was on the market was the Aspect LED from Soltech.
That's
and I
awesome.
Went, oh, this I can actually hang in my living space and not be embarrassed. This is great. And so I actually, contacted them and said, hey, can I get some images? I want to buy one of your lamps and I want to, test it out. And it just ended up, making it into the book because it's a good grow light that doesn't look embarrassing in your living room.
Yeah, I love it. I actually macrame'd the cord of mine to make it look like a little bit, it's like modern meets bohemian.
I need you to do that for me. Can I send you 2 of mine and pay you to do that?
Sure, 100%. It's like shockingly time consuming, but it was real. It's right. I like doing it, so it feels nice. But anyway. Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled, or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up so good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today. So the thing that I love about this conversation we're having is you have just published a book all about lights and artificial light. And what I really want to talk to you about is how to measure the natural light that we have in our houses.
Sure. Well, look, it's trouble that you run into with natural light that's going to lead you to needing to buy my book.
Totally.
Okay. So, and it's finding the balance between using what ambient light you have in your home to grow plants that will tolerate that. And then when you figure out the other plants you want to grow aren't going to thrive, mm-hmm. you step it up to grow lights.
Exactly.
So you kind of have to learn about light in general, whether you're going to grow plants in natural light or you figure out that you're ready to step it up to some grow lighting.
Totally. So Oh, I'm just thinking about like I'm just sighing when I think about like the indoor light issues that I have in my apartment. But so I guess first off, and this is going to be just like measuring and understanding natural light 101 for all of us because I know it's a pain point for me and it's a pain point for a lot of our community. So I guess first off, what I'd love to ask you is how much stronger is outdoor sunlight versus the sun that we're getting in our apartments, even if it's like southern facing exposure, like streaming through the windows, like it's still such a drastically, there's such a drastic difference in that light,
Oh,
correct?
sure. I mean, you can have, I mean, just stepping from inside that southern facing window that you perceive to be very bright out into the sunshine, I mean, can be 10 times the light difference in terms of volume of light, right? Because we always want to think when we're talking about plants, we want to think about the volume of light, not the brightness of light. We want to think about the volume of light. Brightness is relevant to our human eyeballs. Okay, the volume of light particles is what's going to be relevant to your plants. And so that can be an extreme difference. And then you take that from a southern window to a northern window. Sadly, as a horticulturist, I sort of have this horrible situation of being in a horribly dark house with pocket windows that all face north.
Oh, goodness.
So I have no choice but to use grow lights for most of my plant growing activities, even though I have these big picture windows that a less experienced person would look at and say, "Oh, you could grow so many houseplants in these windows." I actually have to hang my aspect grow lights in those windows over my plants in order to provide enough light. In your apartment with unobstructed views and bright windows, there can still be an exponential difference in the volume of light from inside your windows to outside on a sunny day.
Oh my gosh, I have like 500 follow-up questions and comments for what you just said.
Okay.
So first off, when you talk about the volume of light versus how bright the light is, by volume you mean like how much almost like light saturation is actually hitting the plant's leaves?
I actually mean individual particles of PAR, to get a little bit technical, photosynthetically active radiation. That is light that is emitted within the color spectrum of light that actually stimulates and drives photosynthesis in a plant. Not all light that we see, okay, is as useful for photosynthesis as it is bright to our eyeballs. And I have a really good analogy to give you that will make it easy. Real quick, do you know what color of light spectrum that the human eye perceives to be the brightest?
Let's
Take a
let
guess.
me think. I think I just read this in your book, but I
Okay.
can't remember. Is it yellow?
It's green.
Oh, it's green. Okay.
So interestingly, green, while used for other biological processes in a plant, is sort of the least efficient color spectrum of light for photosynthesis, but it's the light that we as humans perceive to be the brightest. So you see the conundrum there. What you perceive as bright light may be the least useful to your plant in terms of photosynthesis, right? And without the thing you're trying to do with light is to drive photosynthesis. So when it comes to thinking about volume versus brightness, a really easy way that I like to think about it in general is that it is to equate the number of light photons hitting your plant or the volume to calories that we as humans consume, right? Yeah. So we have to eat a certain number of calories for our basal metabolic rate, like for our bodies to just function, even if we're not doing a bunch. The same goes for plants. So there's sort of a number of calories, light photons that they need to absorb on a daily basis in order for photosynthesis to work properly in that plant. And that varies by species of plant.
Oh, Leslie, that just
No.
knocked it into my brain in such a beautiful way because there's so many more outdoors, there's so many more calories available to plants, especially because it's like they're getting sun from like almost 300 and 180 degrees when you think about it. When the sun is streaming through a window, that like only one side of the plant is sometimes even almost getting that bright light where like There's more, I guess, limited calories indoors.
Yeah, or raindrops. You can think of it like raindrops. So each photon of light is like a raindrop, right? So if you're standing outside in a rain shower, you're going to get completely soaked in raindrops, right? Mm-hmm. But let's say you've got a plant in a windowsill, you know, with a window open, that the house and the eave and everything is going to block, right? Most of those raindrops, and only some of those raindrops are going to hit the surface of that plant. So that's another way to think about light photons and volume, is sort of like raindrops that are falling. And when you're outside exposed in full view of that rain shower, you're going to absorb many more raindrops than if you're under a covered eave.
Love that. Okay.
Yeah. Does that sort of make it easier to digest?
100%. Okay, that makes it so much more. So we're just kind of setting this whole conversation we're about to have up under the kind of umbrella statement of plants are created to be outdoors. And so when we're having – and they're used to that kind of, you know, that kind of diet. And now, yes. I mean, they're conditioned and they adjust, of course, but now we bring them inside and – they're now experiencing a very different amount of light than.
Correct.
So even the brightest windowsill, the brightest southern facing windowsill, is still not going to hold a flame up to, for lack of a better, I guess, choice of words, up to actually being outdoors.
Correct. Yeah. And that's okay for some species of plants, because many species of plants did not evolve in situations where they're exposed to full sun conditions, right? Yeah. Which is why, you know, many of our houseplants are foliage tropicals that are traditionally understory forest or rainforest plants that are evolved to run photosynthesis on diffused lower volumes of light, right? Mm-hmm. So there you go.
There you go. So I want to go back to another thing that you mentioned. So anyway, so in the next however many minutes we talk for, we are going to kind of understand what the natural light in our indoor environments are and how to like get a better idea of measuring it, or at least understanding how it varies. So general rules of thumb with understanding light. And the first rule of thumb that I learned shockingly late into my life as a plant lady is the window trick. And of course, this is – everybody's apartments are different. Everybody is going to have different building setups. You know, sometimes you have a southern-facing window, but you have a huge building in front of you, so you're actually not getting any light in, or you have an overhang. Or so disclaimer, everybody's internal conditions are different. But what is the rule of thumb with where your windows are facing and how much sun you're getting?
Well, obviously, in the ideal scenario – southern windows, southern facing windows without any obstructions are going to provide you the highest volume of light. Okay. And obviously the more of those windows you have, the more volume of light you're going to have in that room, right? Mm-hmm. That's a pretty simple idea to understand. So plants that require higher light levels, sort of that medium to medium higher light, are going to be suitable for those conditions. You might find that in summer, when light levels are even more intense than they are in winter, that some medium to low light level plants might actually burn a little bit in that environment because they're getting too much light. You know, some plants like African violets, you know, might prefer sort of a moderate light level and can be placed in a window that maybe has some obstruction, right? So it's a southern exposure, but maybe it's not an exposure for the full time that you might normally get in a southern window. Mm-hmm. So, there are all of these nuances to what you can keep in your home. Northern facing windows generally are going to be more shaded, okay, for more of the day. And because if you've got an eave on the house or the building may be shaded all day long. So you're generally in a north facing window, especially in winter, you're going to get what's mostly going to fall into shade to heavy shade plant category. Okay. Right. So if you think about it,
like a nice fern.
Yeah, exactly. Like ferns are going to be good for your northern windows, where you're not necessarily going to get direct hot rays of sun coming through the window like you will in a southern exposed window that has no obstructions. Mm-hmm. So if you've got your bird nest fern sitting in a southern window with no obstructions and it's 3 p.m. in the afternoon and that sun is coming right through that glass onto that fern, chances are you're going to have some scorched areas on those leaves.
Right.
That plant would be happier in a bright, diffuse, north-facing window where it gets exposure to light without direct hot rays of sun, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas a succulent or cactus obviously needs higher light volume. So they're going to be happier in a bright southern facing window. They're not going to be happy in a north window.
No. And then so north is the most ideal for bright, and then second is west, correct?
Well, west is a bit of a toss up because if you've got a western exposure, that means the plant is sitting in, you know, pretty much low light conditions or whatever you have ambient in that room for a good half of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then the sun comes over and it gets blasted with hot afternoon sun.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be a plant that can tolerate medium to higher light conditions.
Okay.
If you go in a west facing window. Okay. Mm-hmm. If you go in an east facing window, then you're in that medium light to medium low light because morning sun is less intense than afternoon sun. So that morning sun is good for plants that are in that moderate light range.
Okay.
So it's kind of like if you've ever gardened outside, if any of your listeners have gardened outside, you're very used to annuals and perennials falling into a shade, part shade, full sun category, right?
Yeah.
So you apply those same rules to your north, south, east, west facing windows.
Okay. So south is going to be the strongest in terms of where the sun's coming at. Then
it's going to be the strongest in terms of hours of light exposure.
Right, hours of light.
Right. So it's an accumulation of volume.
Okay.
Right, which is just as important as your exposure.
So west and east, they might kind of be getting the same amount of time that the sun is streaming in. However, because it rises in the east, it's not going to be as strong as when it sets in the west.
Right. By the time things heat up more in the afternoon and you're going to have a higher sun angle, you've got a more intense delivery of light kind of all at once, you know, in that afternoon. So it needs to be a plant that can tolerate those higher light conditions. If you put it on the west side, plants that are good with morning sun, afternoon shade are going to be good on your eastern exposure.
Okay. And then north is you better stick to low light and say a prayer.
Low diffuse light all day long.
Yeah.
Right. Low diffuse light all day long. Mm-hmm. And your southern window is going to be a brighter light for your longest period of time, which that's why most of the time southern windows are recommended, because it's a more even, brighter delivery of light for more hours a day than a western exposure.
Right. And you have a better chance. I mean, if it's a cloudy day for half the day, or if it rains in the middle of the day, I feel like you have a better chance of at least getting some sort of good quality light at some point of the day.
Yes.
Whereas, you know, if you have a western facing window and it rains in the afternoon or it's cloudy in the afternoon, that's going to look very differently because you only have that smaller time frame to kind of get that light.
Yeah, it's going to end up feeling like an eastern exposure or northern exposure window in terms of light volume.
Right. Okay, cool. So
that makes sense?
Totally. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.
Okay.
So now we understand with our windowsills what light is actually going on. I think for me personally, the biggest issue that I've had as a plant parent is really understanding what happens a foot after my windowsill. Mm-hmm. So this like mystical, like everybody, I mean, I have so many plants, people are like, bright indirect light is the perfect option for this. And I'm like, what
does
that mean?
What does that
mean?
Even mean?
Yeah, like bright indirect light. Like, bright, I don't indirect, know.
Look, but here's the conundrum. Okay, as a professional in the industry who mm-hmm. has sold many people many plants and who has taught for 25 years people how to care for plants.
Yeah.
The reality is that there are so many organic factors we can't control or plan for in your home mm-hmm. or your garden that all we can do is give you a baseline general recommendation for that. Because for example, my northern windows aren't just northern windows. They're pocket windows.
Right.
Okay. That means they're inset. So the walls of my home, right, come out a good 2 feet from that window. What does that mean? That means that those walls are blocking out even more of that light from diffusing into my room. So right. I get this little concentrated spotlight mm-hmm. of light just in the windowsill. Mm-hmm. If you move back a foot or two from that, it's a whole different ball game. So, you know, it's really difficult to give plant consumers very specific light instructions that are going to be meaningful. Now, if you're in the industry, okay, and you understand PAR light measurements and micromoles per meter per second and moles per meter squared per day, we can talk that jargon and provide very specific ranges for light volume for different things. But that's not realistic for the home gardener,
right?
That's
not what we're doing, yeah.
Right. So, you know, it's you go with basic guidelines. I think a really easy way to look at it, bright diffuse light is sort of meaningless for most people. I think that an easier way to look at it is the way we just described it. Is this a full shade plant? Is this a part sun, part shade plant? Is it a full sun plant?
Okay.
Okay. And then you follow the basic generalities that we just discussed about your window exposure. Mm-hmm. And then you take into account any other barriers to light you have, like you said, a building in front of your building or inset windows or whatever it is, big awnings that block out a lot of light. And then you work backwards from that. I think that's an easier way to do it. I can kill ZZ plants and Sansevieria in my house all day long. I've killed a bunch of them because darkness in my house is darkness.
Right. That's amazing because that's it's definitely – those are my two go-to low-light recommendations too.
So anybody that says to you, you can put those two plants in the darkest corner of your home, that's baloney because my dark corner is a whole different ballgame from your dark corner. So you have to work with the space you have, and it takes a little time to develop a relationship with each plant species and figure out what you can and can't grow in ambient lighting in that space.
So let's take my southern facing windows, for example. So in the windowsills, we know, I mean, and we'll get to this later, but you and I have taken some light measurements. Like we know that it's great bright light in the windowsill. So how many feet back from that windowsill that is southern, beautiful exposure, no buildings around me, how many feet back are we now talking – medium light instead of bright light? Do you know what I mean? Like where does that differentiation happen?
First, there's going to be caveats. Like, are there windows on the other sides of that room besides just the southern exposure, or do you only have windows on the southern side?
Oh, no, my apartment, all of our windows are on one side of the apartment. Okay. And then it's a very deep apartment. So something that I've learned is I actually have hugely low light spots in my apartment when I thought that I just had a bright, sunny apartment the whole time.
Right. That light degradation or diffusion happens very quickly in a very small amount of space. So if you're lucky enough to live in one of those very well styled stage spaces that you see plastered all over Instagram and the internet these days that are completely full of plants, because there's windows on every side of the room, practically three sides of the room, then you scored. Mm-hmm. Most of us are not in that situation. So let's take a room that only has windows, even though you've got a number of windows on your southern side, you've got a light tunnel. Right.
Yes.
So the brightest light you're going to have is right in that first, 6 inches of your windowsill.
6 inches. Okay.
Yeah. That's about a ballpark. Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, technically every inch, every centimeter is a difference, but that's getting to a micro level that we don't need to worry about.
Okay.
Right. But every little bit that you move back, you're going to lose the number of raindrops of light photons that's hitting your plant is going to get less and less dense. So the density of light, okay, is going to decrease, every few inches that you move away from that light. So your plant that's sitting right in the windowsill of that southern exposure is getting the brightest light you can have to offer. If you move a foot away, that plant's going to get less light. If you move 2 feet away, exponentially less light, 3 feet away, right? So by the time you've probably moved, I would say, about 5 feet away from that window, you're moving into medium light territory.
Okay.
Okay. 5 to 6 feet. Once you get to sort of like the middle of the room, essentially.
And medium light could also kind of be interspersed with bright indirect light, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes. And it also, again, on a southern side, you're going to get the most hours you possibly can. Mm-hmm. But if that's an eastern or western or northern exposure, then you've changed the ball game altogether. Mm-hmm. Right. So once you go to that, the coffee table, right, that's sitting in the middle of the room, 6 or so feet away from that table, the echeveria is not going to be as happy anymore unless you've got a light in that room hanging over it that's on a good portion of the day. Mm-hmm. So, it might be happy right in that southern windowsill. Once you get to that coffee table in the middle of the room, you're losing a lot of light volume.
Yeah, I actually, this is funny because the way my apartment, I love that you call it a light tunnel because that's exactly what it is. It's just a tunnel of light that comes down. And the way my apartment is formatted is formatted is it's the living room first that has the coffee table that's there just a few feet away. So I'm like, oh, great. And I'm looking at the succulent. I mean, when I had first started out, I bought a beautiful succulent arrangement at Whole Foods and I put it there.
Of course you did.
Right. And one of the succulents etiolated or stretched to grow to the sun. And I was like, oh my God, I'm such a good plant parent. My plant is growing so fast. It's going so well.
I'm so glad I wasn't there to crush your dreams.
Oh my gosh. I know. Then I figured out what happened. But I've actually left it because I think it looks really quirky and funny. And I've moved it closer to the light now that I understand. But interestingly enough, my fluted jade that's also in the succulent arrangement is killing it. Like it looks totally normal. But it was very interesting.
Well, jades will tolerate a moderate light level versus they'll actually tolerate a lower light level than other succulents.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So that was a very interesting learning experience from my behalf. And then also a few feet behind that, I have my Monstera cutting and my Raphidophora or Raphidophora, who knows how you pronounce it, but Tetrasperma. Another climbing plant that's used to being kind of on the bottom of the rainforest.
Yes.
Those are putting out new leaves, but in a good way, not in a stretching for the sun way, like gangbusters.
That's probably actually a perfect medium to medium low light level spot for them.
Right.
Actually. Yeah.
And then, but then what I started doing is then 4 feet behind that. So like a good 12 to 16 feet from my window, which is my kitchen. I was like, oh yeah, this is good. This is bright. This is light. And I would kind of circulate different plants on the corner of my kitchen counter. And I've realized through our work together, our my homework, is that there's almost no light, no natural light in my kitchen.
Right. Yeah. Right. So you get down to, like, if you go to page 46 in my book, you know, I've got some designations of sort of what equals high light to low light. And that's going to fall probably in that shade to heavy shade light volume category. So you're really going to be limited down to just a handful of plants. So, you know, your ZZ plant or your Sansevieria can stick it out there.
Yeah.
But realize that they may not stick it out forever.
Right. It might just be a slow death, a slow burn.
Yeah, yeah. And it always is with Sansevieria and ZZ because, you know, they're so tough. And, you know, I treat them as plants that I have to change out in those really low light spots. So they're just not permanent, or you have to rotate them.
The thing that kind
back of, to the highlight
the thing
situation
that makes
for a
me
while.
Sad about Sansevieria. Sansevieria is one of my favorite plants. I have a ton of them in my apartment and they're my favorite plant to gift someone because I feel like if I don't know your apartment light conditions, a Sansevieria is going to thrive in high light or low light. But the thing
that's very considerate of you,
yeah. But the thing that kills me about Sansevieria is I feel like it's known as the low light tolerant plant, but it actually is a high light plant that's just tolerable. Like it just tolerates low light, and I just feel for the Sansevieria where I'm like, I feel like it never really gets to be in the windowsill because it can tolerate not being in the windowsill, so it doesn't, you know. And like the flower isn't particularly remarkable, so no one's trying to like make it bloom,
right?
And this is just a little thing that I feel that I felt like I needed to share with you.
look, to your comment at the beginning of the conversation, essentially we're abusing all of these plants already by bringing them indoors, right? Mm-hmm. So we are just subjecting the toughest specimens to the worst abuse, which is to relegate the Sansevieria to the darkest corners of our home, which, you know, they will tolerate. I can tell you, so the Sansevierias, and I do this because I've got such low light areas, I will put Sansevierias in these dark areas. And I know that I've got about a year, okay, of them sustaining. And then they're going to start crashing. And what's interesting is that you think, oh, okay, well, I'm going to water them now because I haven't watered them in a long time because they're such in a low light environment that they can't use a lot of water, right? Or you'll rot them. And boy, they will crash and go to mush so fast just with one watering. And the reason is because the photosynthesis rate is so low that the plant can't use that water fast enough because photosynthesis is so low that they just go to mush. And that's what happens with most of your succulents that you bring inside into low light areas and then you water it and the succulent's like, look, I can't even, I'm not getting enough calories to just
leave me alone.
Just, yeah, you watering me now, it's like I can't take it up and I can't use it. So now you've suffocated my roots and I've rotted and gone to mush.
That's interesting you say that, because I definitely thought that it was that the water doesn't have time to kind of evaporate. Like, because at least if it's in a, if you overwater a plant in a southern facing window, now that I'm thinking about it, doesn't make any sense. But this is definitely what I thought, that like the plant would use up the water, but then also if there's sunlight present, the extra water might be able to evaporate a little bit faster. And then,
well, the goal of you putting water on a plant is not for it to evaporate. It's to be absorbed,
of course, right,
by the plant root tissue, right? But if photosynthesis and water and nutrient uptake are intrinsically intertwined. Mm-hmm. The rate of one another drives the other, and it's all dependent on the amount of light that plant does or doesn't get. So when photosynthesis slows down, so does the plant's capacity to use that water you give it.
Yeah.
So that's, if you're overwatering, and this is a big reason why overwatering is generally the biggest killer of houseplants, because but it's not just because it's too much water. It's because it's too much water in low light conditions. So if there were brighter light conditions, there might be a little less overwatering.
Because the plant would be using it. It has nothing to do with the evaporation of the water, Maria.
Right. Exactly.
I'm still learning. I'm still blooming and growing over here. But
That's why people like me write books.
Exactly.
So we can all learn.
Exactly. And why you're generous enough to come on this podcast. Okay. So you're just dropping truth bombs and knowledge bombs left and right over here.
That's how I roll, baby.
I love it. So here's another – I love it. I'm so thankful to you. So, okay. So here's another question. So I've noticed in my southern-facing window, yesterday was a very overcast day, and I felt like as the sun moves, different areas of my apartment get these like very bright beams of sun,
yes,
and they travel through my apartment.
Yes.
And I notice that the beams of sun will go like 6 feet deep into my apartment, and they'll catch those
before they diffuse. Yes.
Right. They'll those like quote unquote medium light plants. So is that a moment, like is that another way of kind of judging rule of thumb in terms of your light? Like if you're seeing these, because that is technically direct sunlight that's getting put on these plants 6 feet away, but the light is very fleeting as it's constantly moving. I mean, maybe the plant gets it for like 45 minutes.
So that's like a quick rain shower.
Okay.
Right. If you think about it again in terms of volumes of units of photons of light, in the accumulation of those calories, if you will, over a 24-hour period. So those beams of light that are hitting that plant, the plant's getting to absorb some extra photons of light during that period. So that's a good thing for you. That's probably why some of the plants that are set further back into the middle of your room are doing okay, because they're in a southern exposure, which means there is going to be some direct more intense sunlight coming through that window. And in that beam of light, you know, the density of light photons is denser. There are more
beaming
little particles of light.
Right.
And so it's really all about accumulation of volume of light over that 24-hour period. So that little burst of sun that's coming through is like an afternoon rain shower. More raindrops of light are going to fall on that plant. So it's an extra boost.
It's an extra boost. That doesn't sustain the plant. That's just like an extra little kind of boost, because today the sun was super strong and those beams were huge. But yesterday there were no beams whatsoever because it was a very overcast day. So that's not like I can count on that.
Right. You can't count on that. I mean, what you have to do is balance your climate, where you live, your latitude, your day length. Okay, the number of hours of day length with the exposure of your windows. And that's what makes it complicated. And that's why there's no set formula that you can give somebody to go home with as to exactly where to place a plant in their home, because there are too many organic variables to manage. So you have to experiment and play with. And one thing I like to do, and we'll get into more technical ways to measure light later. I assume you're going to ask me some questions about that.
Oh, yeah.
But barring that, zero equipment, you've got a handful of plants. The way I like to test out each individual spot is to group together several plants of varying light requirements, high light, medium light, low light, and grow them in that windowsill for a month or so.
Right.
And see what happens.
And see who thrives.
Who thrives and who doesn't. And that's a really easy way for you to figure out what you can grow in that window and what you can't. And what could do with a lower light situation and what might really have to have a grow light in order to survive. And remembering that your summer light levels are going to be much denser and brighter than your winter light levels. And the number of hours of light that you get is significantly less in the winter than it is in the summer.
I just love that you say that because I feel like, especially in the house plant world, you get a plant, it says medium light, you put it in the spot, and then you're like, great, done. But I do think that all of this, like experimenting with having tropical plants indoors, it's all an experiment. And I know that like I've moved almost all the plants, wherever they are in my apartment right now, is not where they started off. Like I've had to definitely right. trial and error, especially with the how vague, quote unquote, bright indirect light is.
Right.
You have right. to really figure out like, okay, but what version of bright indirect light is really the sweet spot for this plant? And it's okay to move them around. And oh, I stuck it too far away from the light and it, you know, is really sad. So I'll move it. It's not like, oh, you're the worst plant parent ever. You didn't figure that out. Like, I feel like all of this is just, there's a learning curve. And I know personally too, like I'll cycle things in and out of, I have 3 grow lights in my apartment. I have too many plants for those 3 grow lights. So sometimes I'll cycle yeah. plants through, you know, who's
I do that all the time.
Yeah. Like who's in my the grow plants, house.
Yeah. The thing about gardening is that it's a verb.
Right.
Okay. Nothing about growing is a verb. Plant keeping is not a static activity. Plants yeah. are not static. They're not.
Even if they look static on Instagram.
Right, right. They are home decor. They are not home decor. They are home decor, right. but they are living.
Yes.
And they are, you know, they're not a set it and forget it. And they're not meant to be set in the corner and never interacted with again. That's not how growing plants works. Mm-hmm. Growing plants is an interactive activity. You know, it's like nature's video game, I think.
Yeah.
You know, you
nature's
you have
video
to,
game. I love that.
Yeah, you have to participate and you are the determining factor in your success. It's not up to the plant, it's up to you. And I move plants around all the time. Again, I'm in a very low light house. So I create little plant vignettes that change all the time because I have so few spots in my house where I can sustain houseplants without grow light. And I'm constantly propagating new plants. I'm constantly, look, as a plant addict, I consume far more plants than I ever have room for. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a huge, obviously, outdoor gardener, in addition to being a huge indoor gardener. And, you know, I don't buy plants because I have a space to put them.
Right.
That's folly. I buy plants because I want that plant and I'll figure the rest out later. Mm-hmm. I'll figure out where it goes later. And so
and
I
you
think
have the knowledge to make it work. You have the knowledge to understand what the plant
yes,
needs.
Yes. Yeah. I have a professional and experiential advantage. However, let me say to you that as a professional horticulturist, I have killed far more plants than you ever will in your lifetime. You will never catch up to me because I right. grow so many and I experiment and I figure out what works and I'm horribly abusive of my house plants and my office plants. You know, because I get so focused on what I'm doing, plants have to be really tough for me. So they're always getting moved around and you're always experimenting and plants are not permanent. Okay. Some plants are going to die. Some plants are not going to work in your space. And I officially absolve you of any green guilt
that you that.
May have of doing that. Because again, the professionals are going to kill way more than you. And you learn how to grow something successfully by killing it once or twice.
I see. Yeah. I say that all the time too. Yes. But I love plants are not permanent. Because also, if you think about it, they're also just like never permanent in the way that you buy them. Like they're growing, no. changing, living things. And they're never going to look the way that you looked when you bought them.
I mean, you don't buy a puppy and expect it right. to never change.
Yeah. yeah.
There's really, you know, plants are lower maintenance than puppies, but they are living things nonetheless. And so you do, you know, you can read that tag. And this is true with outdoor garden plants as well. You know, I'm in Dallas, Texas. So, mm-hmm. you know, my son's situation here is much different. You're in New York.
Yeah.
Is much different than yours, you know? Yes. So we have a whole different situation here and climate and sun intensity and all sorts of things. And most of the industry that writes the plant tags for plants that you buy is very northern centric. And most of what you find on plant tags has no relevance here in Texas in my gardening climate.
Right.
None. Completely wrong. So you take the plant tag information with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
And understand that regardless of what it says on that tag, you have to figure out what that plant does in your particular individual environment. And then it's your job to make it work or to move it or to not grow that plant anymore.
And that's I feel it like goes. It is literally half intuition, half education. Like
an experience.
Experience.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with it. It really is, you know, it takes a long time to learn how to grow specific crops and plants. It takes years of experiencing for you to be able to, you know, have that intuition about what's going to work and what's not going to work. You know, I have that intuition about a lot of things, and I can predict a lot of outcomes for you. You know, it might take you a few years to figure out.
Totally. I mean, even just thinking my 1 year anniversary of like not killing all my plants was this summer.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I'm so very proud. But, you know, in that 1 year, there's four seasons in 1 year. So like I was constantly learning, like that 1 year, I just kind of made all my errors in each season. And now in the second year, I'm going and knowing a little bit more. But like it is, you really do need a lot of time because these plants go through all of these seasons and they're affected by them.
Well, sure. It's hands-on experience. And then, I mean, shoot, I spent 8 years in higher education getting degrees in this. You know, horticulture is a science. You know, gardening is a hobby. Horticulture is a science. There are so many levels of layers of information to learn, you know, and learning to garden and grow plants takes years and years of hands-on experience. So, you know, there, if you don't want to mess with it, you can buy artificial plants. And I, as a horticulturist, I'm not going to shame you for that because I have some too, due to the darkness of my home. But if you want to grow living plants, you're going to have to just play around with, you know, where they will work, where they won't, and accept the fact that you're going to buy this particular species of plant and you're going to try it where you intend to grow it. And fully understand that it may or may not work for you. And that's okay.
And that's okay. So, oh my gosh, we're just like jamming and having the coolest conversation. And I'm like, I haven't even asked you how to measure light yet. I mean, isn't that the perfect place to stop for this first part of this two-part episode? I love that. And it really is amazing. We talked for almost an hour and well, I thought that this conversation was initially just going to be a 45-minute conversation, and in the midst of it, it became very clear that Leslie had too much valuable information to impart on us. So I hope you enjoyed this first General Tools episode, and I cannot wait to bring you the Measuring Tools episode next week because there are a bunch of aha moments. I think everybody is going to be very excited and empowered to go measure their own light, and it's going to be a really fun conversation. So until next week, my friends, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you want to join the Bloom and Grow Garden Club, head over to bloomandgrowradio.com/garden-club to join the planty fun. When you join, you get a free download of the Keep Blooming print that Molly Mansfield made exclusively for us, and you will also get an email with the password to the private Facebook group, which is what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is pretty amazing. For behind the scenes scoop, plant tips I learn along the way, and sneak peeks of future episodes, follow me on Instagram at @bloomandgrowradio. And plant friends, I'm here for you, so drop me a line if you have an idea for an episode, live event, or maybe if you're a planty business looking to sponsor the show. I am always here to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, PlantFriend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.